Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching. Today, we are going to look at human flourishing, and I'm taking this from a political philosopher named Danielle Allen. Dr. Allen is a professor in Harvard, and she has several books on democracy and civic engagement and how that contributes to human flourishing. And the way that she defines human flourishing is the ability to live autonomously. And when she talks about human flourishing, she's talking about being able to live in an authentic way with total autonomy, allowing you to forge your own path. So that's what we call self-determination. So it's unfettered self-determination. Nothing's in your way. You can forge your own path. And that is what she defines as human flourishing. And she sees that as innate to our species as human beings, that we innately are autonomous beings. We are creators and we are autonomous beings. And so in order to flourish, we need to be unfettered. We need to have that ability to exercise that autonomy. And from her framework as a political philosopher, she has five facets of what she calls political equality. And she argues that political equality is essential for human flourishing. And there are five facets to that. The first is there needs to be an experience of non-dominance, which basically means no matter where you are in the political spectrum, where you are economically, you are seen as an equal. You are not, no one is higher than you. No one is lower than you. It's kind of like the round table. You have a seat at the table. It's a round table. No one's at the head. No one's at the foot. No one's, you know, getting crumbs. Everybody's at the table and there's no dominance. And the way that dominance plays out in politics is you have an oppressed, an oppressor, somebody who's taking someone's autonomy in order to maybe for political gain or for economic gain. So in order for there to be political equality, there needs to be non-dominance where everyone is equal in power. The second thing is access to the instruments of government. So that means, you know, you have access to all of the, like the committee meetings, like commissions and boards and all those things. You have access to the government institutions, that nothing is barred to a citizen. You can't not be at a council meeting or you know, learn about what's going on in the government. The third thing is what she calls, this is a big term, epistemic egalitarianism. So basically access to knowledge. So everybody is privy to everything that is important to an issue. There's no closed doors. Everybody knows what's going on. Everyone has not only book knowledge, but street knowledge as well. The fourth facet of political equality is reciprocity. And that is where I, you know, afford you your agency and you afford me my agency. And finally, the fifth one is co-ownership. So co-ownership of government, co-ownership of policies, co-ownership of, you know, things that are being enacted, that everyone has ownership to that. It's not just the elites. It's not just the economic, the captains of industry. It's everyone. Everyone has co-ownership to that. Those are the facets. Of course, it's from a political lens. And so today, Erin and I are going to just play around with this idea of flourishing from a coaching lens. One thing that really sticks out for me in the five facets that Professor Allen discusses in her book, which is called Justice by Means of Democracy. And the way that she frames the idea of this innateness and allowing that autonomy, allowing that authenticity. And I think that as a coach in coaching, one thing that we can do to support and help our clients and ourselves flourish is to remember that, remember our innateness, who we really are, and to speak to and align with who we really are, so that we're always asking those questions that are going to reveal who we really are. So that's one facet that really speaks to me as a coach when I think about flourishing. Erin, what are your thoughts?
So I am so appreciative of what you have shared so far about Dr. Allen's model. And I think there's so much richness there. And I, for me, the thought of, like you said, about the authenticity or autonomy as well. It's interesting. Maybe we could look at both of those words here eventually too, but how that provides the uniqueness, the strengths to come out of an individual. And I think in coaching, that is the modality where I have been able to witness that the most, as well as have that changed within me the most. Not to say that other modalities are not effective, but it just depends on what we're looking at. But when I'm thinking about helping people live in their own true, authentic nature within their strengths, I see how the questions that we ask in coaching from a curious lens, that we are a companion with the individual and a collaborator. Those three things, collaborator, companion, and then how we ask questions, I think really relate to this model at the individual level. So that's where I started to go in terms of just general coaching practices and general coaching concepts. At the larger political scale level or at the larger American culture scale, this is to me where I'd love for us to be. I see the benefit to this in so many ways. I can see the critique on some people's minds potentially that this is maybe someone might say this is socialism, or maybe someone might say that this is too aspirational. This could never work. I can already hear the critiques that I'm used to hearing. But it's interesting because those critiques tend to be kind of thought of in systems too. So like when working at the university, there seems to be like this very a lens there, right? That people tend to have a group think around. And then, seeing kind of some of the different political parties, there's like this lens that there's like this level of group think about. So there's so much dismantling, I think, that we need to get to be able to build toward this. And I'm not, calling for a violent dismantling or anything like that, but just like this, I don't know, nature of how do you break down the process to rebuild the process? And that goes back to coaching as well. We have to look with our clients at old ways of being, old ways of thinking, and there has to be shifts. There has to be changes, not only in how we think or the way that we feel, but also in the way that we act. And so coaching is another modality that provides that for people too, to be able to make those changes and perspective shifts that are so invaluable to growth and learning and change. And I would like to kind of, I don't know, I'm feeling a little bit like agitated because there is this sense of the critique that I mentioned that might come up about how is this even something that you implement? And I want to go back to this idea of abundance. And I think is it Ezra Klein's new book on abundance? I first came into the term with abundance probably 8 years ago at CU when we were talking about it, and just thinking about how we can reframe how we view things in terms of what is not possible versus what is possible. We tend, I think, to always go to, well, that's not possible. Well, what is possible? And how do we grow with that abundance? Because people ask that question all the time as billionaires. They want to know what's possible when it comes to making money, right? And they make that happen because they know there's abundance. They know that deep down. And we, want to know and feel that abundance too, I think. And maybe not monetarily, but just to know that there is enough and there is a way forward for structuring things that is more democratic and is more inclusive. And so I kind of want to go there in some way, but I know that doesn't take us all the way back to coaching, but I'll just stop there and pass it back to you, LaShawn.
Those are all very good points. And yeah, I do definitely see where there could be a critique for this being a communist or socialist lens. And I would encourage our listeners to go ahead and look up Dr. Allen on YouTube. She's got an amazing video where she talks specifically about this book, Justice by Means of Democracy. And when she talks about it, I think she very clearly shows how this is in alignment with our values as Americans, that it is not a communist, but it is rather, it is a refinement and a new perspective on, she calls it a paradigm shift, and on how we make decisions. And it's all about decision making. And one of the things that she talks about is co-creation. And that is something that we do in coaching. We are co-creators. As Erin, you said, we are collaborators. We are co-creators. We lend our observations, our feedback, what we see, and also we ask those questions. Those questions are going to delve into the heart of the matter. And I think that is something that is very valuable when you're working with a coach or when you're looking at something from the coach's lens. And then to speak to what you were saying about possibility, Erin, as a positive intelligence coach, I have to say that we may not be able to bring this to the whole world, or we may not be able to bring this to the nation. However, we can bring it to ourselves and we can bring it to our circle of influence. So I think if we really focus on our individual journey, how we show up in the world, if we can take into account our own authenticity, that unique part of ourselves, that uniqueness that makes us who we are, no one else can be me. No one else sees the world the way I see the world. And therefore, my opinion, my thoughts, my perspective, my view matters. And I think what this model lends to the conversation is looking at all voices, what voices are being heard, what voices are not being heard. I don't think it would take away from the experience if we were to take into account other voices and perspectives. I think it adds to the richness of our discussion, and it adds to the richness of our nation if we take into account other people. I also think that it's really important, and this goes back to coaching, is your vision. I think you can have different opinions and different ways of looking at things, but if you can find a common ground or you can find a common vision that you're working toward, it could be easier. And one thing that Dr. Allen talks about in the book, and this is where I think coaching comes in, is the idea of bonding and bridging. So bonding is what we do when we are like kinship, for example, families. We have a shared history, we have a shared bloodline, or people who are in the same church or people who are in the same social group. They have something in common that they share. And then there's bridging. That's where you're taking different groups of people and you're bridging. You have a common vision or a common goal that you're working towards, very much like a nation, where you have many different groups of people and you're looking for that common ground, common goal, or vision. And that's co-created in Dr. Allen's model. And that's where I think coaching comes in because, again, as coaches, we step away from, the situation. We look at it objectively and we're able to ask questions about aspirations, desired outcomes, that kind of thing, that can then peel away those surface or not so surface differences that we have to maybe get to a common out, to a common ground. So on a macro level, I think coaching can really work towards bridging different populations, different groups, like different races, different socioeconomic group, blending them, not blending them, bridging them together, I think is one thing that coaches can do and coaching can do. When we're working with a client in positive intelligence, we often talk about the many different perspectives in a situation. We look at the individual, we look at the situation, and we look at the people involved, if there are any people involved. So we're looking at all the different perspectives, and I think it adds to the richness, the depth, the breadth of the situation, understanding everything. I think not everything, but understanding more is beneficial and could lead to flourishing. What do you think, Erin?
Yeah, you had a lot of good points in terms of what you're framing here at the macro level and the individual level. And it made me really realize how those can happen in tandem or in parallel if we think about this through a coaching model where, let's say, somebody is doing the coaching work one-on-one, they could also be doing more of the bridging work that, in their communities as well, externally, like you were talking about. And I think that these two things do need to happen, not simultaneously exactly, but at least side by side, at least being able to kind of bounce within both the individual and then the societal kind of piece here is kind of how I'm starting to frame it and think about it. And I think that at the individual level with coaching, one thing that came up to me is one of the words that you said was her third tenet, which was epistemic egalitarianism. So everybody has access to equal knowledge. And I think that is something to interrogate in coaching when we think about perspective shifting, because certain people have access to certain knowledge and others do not, right? Certain people have access, like you said, to the street, certain street knowledge, and other people, aren't savvy in that way or whatever it might be. And so when we can have more of collective opportunity to engage with new learning, because I think coaching is all about learning, whether that's learning about ourselves or others, there is then going to be that perspective shifting that needs to happen, that needs to take place to get to maybe some of these other outcomes, more of the political egalitarianism or more of the reciprocity. It's interesting because when I think of like information exchange between where I grew up and where I'm at right now, what I have access to here is very different from what my family has access to where they're at. Not saying that one is necessarily better than the other, but it has created a big gap, even at the roots of the familial system, in that, we aren't even speaking the same language at all, or not even close. And so I am curious about how this framing can also help heal relationships, help us find more common ground, like you said, to better understand ourselves and each other. So there's just this understanding piece. And I think in coaching, we often sit with the individual or the client to help them really work through their own thinking and feeling, their own way of being, et cetera. And then that helps us then eventually get to action. Whereas in the past, just historically at a larger scale level, we always want to go so fast and so quick to get to action, right? But if we don't do some of that other work up front, if we start with action, we're going to have to go back and redo. And I'm the worst when it comes to that in my own personal life. I just want to go and make it happen. And I have to go, wait a second. I need to sit back. I need to better understand my values, my motivations here. And then I can find a way to move forward. And I know, like in the entrepreneurial world and some business owners, they've really thrived sometimes on going straight to action, right? And so I think there's a gap there because they will see that, well, I can make things work by doing this. But it's like, really, is that working? Or are there all these little band-aids below the surface that we need to chip it away at more systemically on a larger scale? So I would like to explore eventually what it looks like to have the runway of really understanding ourselves and understanding others to then finally get to this place of action. And that's slow. That's not fast moving, right? And I'm also feeling just internally right now, I want things to happen faster. Like, how do we make this work better in our communities, like right now, that sort of thing. And so I don't know. I think one of the things that I'm learning as I'm talking aloud right here too is part of the coaching process where you go into the mystery of it all and you don't have answers. And that's when you get to really play, or that's when you really get to collaborate with the coach to go back and forth to come up with different ways of thinking or different ideas around something or different strategies that might help you get to the next space of where you want to be. It's kind of like I think of a guide. It almost feels like a video game in some ways, like the coach is right there with you and helping coach you through the game, for lack of better words. But it's more internal, I think, too. It's really finding a way to make those shifts happen. So this book came out of Harvard Law, or she's a Harvard Law professor, or is that correct?
She's a political philosopher.
A political philosopher. Yeah. Yeah, so I would be curious. I would love to know for people who are not, let's see, how do I want to say this? Like, I guess this also brings up big questions about political philosophy in general. Maybe that's it. Maybe going back, instead of trying to, again, get to the action, get to this, it's like, whoa, maybe I need to go start all over from the beginning with clients about their own philosophies. So, us understanding her political philosophies or understanding that this is written from a political philosopher's point of view, you know, our lives are written from our own philosophies too. And how are those informed? But then how are those also grown through coaching and through access to information?
Yeah, absolutely. So Dr. Allen describes herself in very big terms. Like, if by big, I mean like very academic. So if I were to paraphrase how she describes herself, she is a philosopher who believes in goodwill, I would say. So she believes in human flourishing. That is her main focus, is human flourishing. She also believes that the government constitution, she's very much into the Constitution. She has books about the Federalist Papers and describing, explaining the Constitution, and she believes that it's you are able to correct things, right? We're able that it is corrigible, so you can correct it. She also believes it's fallible, so it's not perfect. And so she believes that there are aspects of our Constitution and of our government and the way that we do things that work and things that don't work. And she believes that that can be molded and shaped, and it's dynamic. It's not like rigid. She's not rigid about the policies and the political decision-making process that we have in place. So she's looking at it as fallible and corrigible, and that she also is pragmatist as well. She's a pragmatist as well. So she's wanting to apply it, and she's wanting it to play out in the day-to-day. It's not just for the ivory towers. So that's her philosophy. Now, I like that you brought up philosophy, because I think that's really important, starting with beliefs, values. We talk about that in coaching as well. We talk to our clients about their values. We talk about their belief system, like what do they believe is possible? We often talk about that. Now, one thing that we might want to ask our clients, in the same vein as Dr. Allen and how she describes herself as a philosopher, is, do you believe that your life can change? Do you believe that there are things in your life that can be shifted? Or are you a type of person who thinks this is the way things are and they can't change? I am who I am and that's not going to change. Or are you a type of person who is willing to grow and to expand and to take risks? So I think there's a lot to be said about that exploration in the coaching lens, just focusing on philosophy. What is your philosophy? How do you feel about growth, change, and how do you feel about flourishing? That could be another question to ask our clients is, when you hear the word flourish, or when you think about flourishing in relation to your life, where you are right now on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put yourself? So being able to measure, being able to take stock of our lives, where we are, where we are, where we've been, and where we want to be. So those are some things that have come up as you were talking about philosophy. Anything coming up for you?
I just love those questions. How do you feel about flourishing with the question you asked that question and obviously some other really effective and thoughtful questions. And I think that those are important questions at the coaching level and just for where we're at in time as well. I think we can get stuck thinking that there's not enough, that we're not enough, there's not enough resources, so we need to compete and tear people down or look out just for our own interests. And I think that's where coaching might sometimes get a bad rap because people think that it's hyper individualized and people are only looking out for their own interests. And it's like, it's not that, not even close to that, right? Like, it is helping people explore, like you said, those philosophies and values to live the best life they can live. And that does include, right, lifting other people up. That includes saying kind things about other people. And I think that that can often get lost in translation sometimes. Some people hear Oh, you meet with people one on one, and it's like, yeah, and the impact can be much, much larger for the individual and for others as well. And so I would love those to jump off like what you were talking about, the questions about flourishing, and keep going down that path and maybe ask some more questions in that area. What makes you flourish? How do you know that? What does it feel like not to flourish? Like really understanding why do you think that people don't flourish? And maybe apply that to yourself. Why do you think that you do not flourish in certain areas or whatever it may be? I think the topic of flourish today, that word, that could be so many different coaching questions in itself. And maybe that's something we should add to our work that we're working on right now. We have the parts, the fourth could be flourish,
Flourishing.
and then
Yeah,
question.
absolutely.
Because I think those can be so empowering. And I think I've brought this up on another podcast, but when I was working in a different job, I remember a woman would always say, it feels like this place, it's crabs in a bucket. People are just like racing to drag other people down to kind of get to the top. And that's not flourishing right up at all. It's
Sure.
and so I want to kind of explore maybe that concept makes me think of the word competition and how do flourishing and competition intersect? And what would Dr. Allen say about competition? Like, what are we talking about here when we think about competition?
That is a really good question, and I don't know what Dr. Allen would say about competition. I know that she's touched on that kind of thing in her book, and also, but I've just started to learn about Dr. Allen actually. So, if done in a way that it's not from a scarcity mindset, but more a growth mindset. So, for example, if we just take a personal example, let's say that we're competing. Even with yourself, like you could be competing with yourself, and you could be like, last year I got so far in my growth journey, and this year I want to go 10% more. And so you're always looking back to where you've been and where you want to go. So you're kind of competing with yourself in a way. And if you're competing with another person, so, for example, and this is not necessarily competition. I see it more as inspiration. I have a friend who is very, she lives in alignment, and I look at her, and it's not compare despair. It's like I look at her and I see what's possible because I see how she cares so much about how she feels, and she does everything that she can in a very authentic and sincere way. It's not like she's bypassing, but she does it in such a way that she's like, I'm committed to feeling good. And so I'm going to do everything that I can to feel good. She meditates for an hour. She looks at the positive aspects of her life. She chooses to focus on the things that make her feel good. And so when I'm, feeling down or I'm feeling particularly discouraged, I think about her and I think about how inspirational she is and how great it is to be around her and how uplifting it is to be around someone who is not at all interested in a kind of selfish or like judgmental way in other people and how they live their lives. As a matter of fact, she's very respectful of how people live their lives. She's also clear in how she lives her life. And she's so positive in that she's looking at all the things that work for her and she's growing in that, that I see myself as wanting to stay at her level. And so I'm encouraged by her. And at the same time, I'm also inspired by her because I see how great it feels to be in her presence, and I want to be the type of person who uplifts people. I want to show up in life as myself without doing anything or like earning anything, but basically just by my presence, I'm uplifting people. And that's what she does. And so that's not necessarily competition, but it is taking into account where someone is, in their life and how they're showing up in their life. And how I can use that as an inspiration or encouragement. Erin, what are your thoughts about competition?
I just felt happy listening to this woman, this description of this woman. I was like, okay, I need to see her. And coaching is inspirational too, right? And it is kind of allows for that uplifting space. And it's not toxically positive. I know we've talked about this, but it is uplifting. And I think those are very different things, coaching in terms of how we uplift our clients, how we celebrate their successes, those sorts of things too. But this competition thing, I think is interesting because it's almost like our country, like at a larger scale level, is that's what it's built on in a lot of ways. I don't know if it's like when I think of how you described your relationship to this woman, I don't think my brain is there yet with how that looks at a larger scale, but maybe that's the point. It has to happen at the individual level. We have to take it upon ourselves as clients, not as the coaches, as clients to do that work, to find that happiness, to uplift other people, to uplift ourselves, to share in that community with other people. And so I think maybe that might be one of the takeaways that I'm getting here too, is sometimes it can feel like when you read a political philosophy or a textbook or other types of books that it's all very heady and cognitive and not in relation. And obviously this is not that book, right? Because she talks about reciprocity and that relational aspect being so invaluable. And I think that that's part of when we can see the person, when we can see that we're not competing with some robot. We're competing with a human being that has the same level of, and I'm gonna go use this, brokenness. I couldn't help myself there with that
That's
word.
mm-hmm.
The same level of brokenness, the same level of humanness. And I know it's a very humanistic lens, right? But focusing on what would soften any sort of comparison and let kind of the light in. I don't know. I'm just seeing in my head, like just like this, these lights coming out of these hearts. This is like the visual I'm getting of people just all around the world with that. And that to me feels like flourishing when we can break down some of those hardened spots that doesn't let that light through or let that light be received. I think that that is part of the magic of flourishing is the creative aspect here. So like the visual, and you talked about the creative process at the beginning, right? That you said something about creativity. I thought, oh, we are creators and autonomous. And I think that as I've kind of talked throughout this episode in my own being, I have gotten to this place of being more fulfilled creatively, right? More open-hearted. And I think that's part of what she's talking about with flourishing too. And so even just the opportunity to sit and talk with someone, right? I think that is another coaching modality that can be really helpful for engaging that autonomy, engaging that creative process. And I just think it's also magical that every human being, nobody has ever, ever, ever had the same lived experience. And I remember growing up 80s, 90s, early 2000s, and there was always this like pushback. I don't know if this was happening in your area too, like on the individualistic thing. Like everybody thinks they're special. Everybody thinks they need an award. And I don't think that was what was at the root of that. I think what was at the root of that was this final recognition that we are all not machines. We are all not the same in that way. And I think that got a lot of flack. People are too soft, is what I'd hear, things like that. And I think that is not the point of this at all. Right? Because flourishing, there's never too much softness, right? I don't know. And I don't know. I feel like inside too, as I talked through that like childhood piece, I got a lot of anxiousness and a lot of fear. Fear came into the picture there because these types of concepts weren't really allowed, or, and so when fear starts to come in, how do we help our clients stay grounded? How do we help them, integate that fear to move forward into that open-hearted creative space. So that's another space where coaching is so powerful, I think, is helping people really look at fear for what it is for them and hopefully grow with it with the gratitude and understanding of it.
I love what you said about fear because the first thing that came to mind was fear is information. It's information that you're getting into the growth zone, right? You're venturing out of your comfort zone, and there's that part of you, that ego, that part of you that's like, "Hey, wait a minute, wait a minute. We don't know this part. Like, we don't know what we can and cannot do here, and we don't know if we are going to succeed here, so we need to stop. We need to, maybe figure it out." So the first thing that came to mind when you were saying about how do we help our clients, with the fear is just, ask what is fear telling you? What is the information that you're getting from that fear? From and I want to go because I'm curious to know, as you were talking about flourishing, as you were talking about competition, and that you said, it could never be too soft with flourishing, and what, like, I'm really curious to know, like, what is coming up for you? Like, what is the fear? And are you willing to talk about that? Or I don't want to get too personal here, but that would be something that I would be curious about. Like, where is this fear coming from? What is this fear trying to tell me? And, it gives us pause. It gives us a chance to stop and kind of look and see, is this really as deep as I think it is? Before I jump, maybe I should throw a rock and see what happens, that kind of thing. It does give you pause, and there is a place for fear, and I think it is an indication, hey, look, we are in a place where we have gone beyond our limits, maybe. We're kind of at that boundary between comfort and growth. Ooh, that's exciting. So what are your thoughts, Erin?
I mean, at the highest level, the fear is fear of authority. Going back to that childhood scarcity, scared. It is about competition. It's not about winning, everybody winning all these medals and like, oh, you shouldn't be happy, like or whatever it might be. Like, I think that for me, comes down to just this general idea of that fear of authority, which ties directly back to what she says, right? About the autonomous. Like the autonomy of the political system and political equality and not have oh non-dominance. The need to be, this is the one, sorry, the first tenet. There needs to be an experience of non-dominance because we're met with dominance as kids consistently because of the way the world works, because of how we view youth in our world. And I think that that's a big challenge too, right? As a parent. On my end, yeah, like I probably sometimes will go too authoritarian or not enough in terms of like setting enough boundaries or whatever it may be. So it's always a balancing act and it's always a challenge, especially when you're up against like what does society consider typical? What do you think deep down should be the case for what's best for your own children? So yeah, as a parent, I'm constantly grappling with that. But as a kid, that I just went back to feeling what it felt like to have that authoritarianism over over who I was.
Yeah, and that goes back to what you said about what does it feel like not to flourish? Because where my mind went was that kind of constricting, look down at the floor, be small, be quiet. That kind of that feeling of, oops, I said something or did something I shouldn't have. I've been put in my place. Let me stay in my place.
Yes, you're saying
And
this. That's exactly. Keep going. I'm like, oh my gosh, that
so,
has said so
and
much
then,
better than what I said.
oh no, I think that what you said just brought in to me like this feeling of when you said authority, the first thing that came to mind was when I was a child, when I would speak out of turn, or I would have no filters and I would say what's on my mind, or I would get involved in, this is something in the Black community. You don't talk, you do not get involved in adult conversations, And I would, I was a very precocious child and I would listen to the adults and I would say something, and you better believe one of those adults would give me that look like,
you need to go play. This is not your space. This is not your place. And so there's this feeling of, being small, of not having a voice, and this sense that you don't have the authority or the respect or the place to speak. It's not you are a child. You need to go to the child's table, or you need to go to, this is not for you to speak. And it's not a gentle, loving, hey, this topic may be a little bit too, big for you, or thank you, or even a thank you for your thought, or thank you for your opinion, but we really need to speak as adults right now, so can you go play? There was nothing like that. It was like, you stepped out of line. You don't have a say here. You need to go play. So it's a kind of dismissiveness that I experienced in my upbringing, which what you said just brought me back to that. And then it also echoes what happens when you speak up and you don't know the topic very well, or you're not the right color, or you're not the right, you don't identify with the right gender, or you don't, so then you can't talk. So there's that too, that silencing of people who, are not, don't have that appointed label, that they have that authority. You don't have the authority to talk about Black issues because you're white, or you don't have the authority to talk about trans issues because you're cisgendered. So that dismissiveness continues in adulthood. It's not just children and adults. It's like, now you have authority if you're part of this group, and you can't speak about this group's issues with that. And so what does that do? What does that do to the discussion, the conversation, and our feeling of autonomy?
Yeah, it does a lot. And I like how you got very specific about how that was feeling as a child and the examples, because that resonated a lot with what I was trying to say. And I definitely see that playing out into adulthood. It's like we bring these childlike behaviors to adulthood for a reason. And I know there's a lot of really amazing counselors that work on inner child work and some coaches and different things too. And how do we let go of some of those coping strategies that didn't work very well for us in childhood, that we still want to hang on to because of traumas or fears and things like that, and how do we move forward collectively? But I like this point too about how do we talk about the issues and feel like we can talk about them safely with non-judgment and strict curiosity. And I think that goes back to the beginning with coaching. We as coaches have to stay in curiosity mindset, because we're not, when we go into judgment mode, I think it shuts off our ability to learn and obviously listen well. And so I think that's the piece here for tying it back to coaching, is this type of framework really helps us go back to the roots of what makes really good coaches really good coaches. And then the other piece here too, like certain people, it seems like, can speak on certain issues and certain cannot, and you frame that. And then there's this other level too of like certain people tend to just have, it seems like, confidence or something to speak on an issue consistently, or to post a lot of random things on Facebook that just I don't feel very aligned with, or what that might be. And so I struggle with this idea of this confidence piece, going back to that word, I guess, of how people get into those spaces with kind of very judgment. Everything is it from a place of judgment. And maybe that's it. Maybe it is all about curiosity, and am I judging that right now? And how can I be more curious about that as well? But everybody, right, should have that opportunity to voice what they think and feel. And some of the smallest voices will leave, right, some of the largest scale imprints. And, I'd always hear that with Evelyn, they're like, oh, a really small footprint left a huge impact here, or whatever it might be. And so I think one thing that I'm feeling right now too is being able to say, we should listen to our children and, listen to those voices that we might traditionally think are uneducated or not refined enough, or, kind of getting into that meritocracy space, right? And how we can bump up against that too, and how we can really encourage one another to let them have their light too, and and share, because we learned so much from things we agree with and things we don't agree with anyway. So I like this idea of having spaces to talk authentically. And I think there has to be a way for us to do that with non-dominance. And that goes back to probably some level of scaffolded conversations. And I think with coaching, that's also true. Like people come to us and see us as an authority and might feel like we have some level of dominance as a client coach relationship. But I think what's really magical too with coaching, with that dominance piece, it brings us back to equilibrium, or it brings us back to being humble. We're like kind of lesser in a lot of ways than the client. We let the client be big. Our goal is to help the client be big and be themselves. So
Yeah, and I think it also speaks to even deeper, how can we imagine ourselves and how we interact in society, with non-dominance. And that's something that Dr. Allen spends quite a bit of time in chapter two of her book. And she talks a lot about non-dominance and how it shows up and how it can be part of the political experience, the civic engagement. And that is something that really makes me think about how do we see each other? What is the purpose? It really does go to purpose. And she does speak to this in her book as well, purposiveness or something like that. I cannot say it, purposiveness. And that is something that's very close to what we do as coaches. We look at purpose. The why is a big question for our clients and for ourselves. And that is one thing that comes to mind for me is what is this all about? Are we coming together to enrich, enhance, and uplift? Is this a transactional relationship that we have? Or can we recognize the oneness and the unifying factors at play? So it really does boil down to purpose and, what is the purpose here? Because if the purpose is to uplift and enhance and inspire and to co-create, then the question of competition, authority, dominance, all of those things probably would not be a priority. It could be present. I'm not saying it wouldn't exist. I'm just saying it probably wouldn't be a priority because if I'm interacting with someone who, due to society, the way society is, if they seem lower than, or if they're, so for example, if I'm in an administrative position and I'm talking to someone who is an assistant, I'm not going to talk to them like they don't matter or that I know more than they know. I do know a little bit more than they do, but it doesn't mean that what they know is less important than what I know. And
Exactly.
I think that's where it comes. Like, if we see society or we see systems and the things that are in place to for society to run, are they in place to dominate? Are they in place to suppress? Are they in place to pull some down to bring some up, or are they in place for all of us to rise? And I think that's what Dr. Allen wants. I think she's proposing that democracy is the vehicle to human flourishing across the board. And that, of course, is part of the debate and it's part of, the discussion and the co-creation. Some people may believe that, but I believe that as coaches, as individuals, we can bring that flourishing to a small corner of the world. It doesn't have to be everywhere, but it could be in your sphere of influence, your family, in your mind.
Yeah, your peace. Yeah.
So
Okay,
I think we're
well,
very
touching nugget of wisdom
close.
time
We're very
potentially.
close. Yes, we are. We are. I could feel it. I could feel the coaching nugget of wisdom feels like that is what's coming up. So, do you have anything in mind or should I take it?
Let you go if you have some. If not, I'll go, but
I think this conversation is so rich and there's so many pieces, but I keep going back to the power of working on these things from an individual level. And I want to propose to our listeners the question, where can you create space in your life to flourish?
I love that. And I feel like my brain right now is going from like individual to macro. Like it will not. I'm like, okay, let's settle. Let's settle here and at least pick a direction of clarity or something. And I just always go back to like the authenticity piece as far as everybody here who is a human being here on Earth was given a unique set of strengths that makes them who they are, that helps them shine in their purpose. And, you know, with coaching that can be brought forward and be held more intentionally. But on the other end of that, my call, I guess, as a coaching nugget of wisdom is to look for that authentically brightness. I feel like the open heart with the light and everybody that you encounter every day this week and see what happens within yourself.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Meychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.